We have Bhaskar Pradhan next. He'll talk of how our model is disruptive to the industry. He is the Vice President of Worldwide Sales for us. Bhaskar.
Thank you, Sandeep. I want to begin by thanking Nandan for covering my presentation almost in its entirety. So at this point, I'll take questions. I think he articulated, of course, really, really well, far better than I can. But I think it'll still be useful for us to go through this and understand with a little in a little more depth why we believe our business model is so disruptive to the incumbents. Before I begin, let me just talk about this whole disruptive business models a little. For those of you who have read his excellent books, Professor Clayton Christensen is really, he's probably furthered the whole disruptive business model theory the most. He's written two books, Innovator's Dilemma and Innovator's Solution, which are really excellent books. He was also, he was a keynote speaker at Milan, our annual event last year, and much of the conceptual framework for this I've borrowed from him, from his thinking. He often talks about Dell as a disruptive business model in its industry, and Nandan talked about it as well. And it'll be worth our while to actually just go a little deeper into that, because there are a lot of similarities. When Dell started out with its direct build-to-order business model, it started out in a certain segment of the market. It was more, personal computer, and it was direct to home rather than large corporates, the home and small businesses. After they sort of conquered that piece of the market, they started going into both large corporates as well as other product lines, servers, even consumer electronics now. Now, in their business model, which was direct and built to order, they were competing against an entrenched business model, of which the category leader was Compaq. Right? So they were competing against the Compaq. Compaq was a great company. It led that category, but it had huge investments in its dealer network and its corporate sales function. Both these actually made it successful. So you're looking at, and this is again coming back to what a disruptive business model is, for Compaq to compete against Dell, the only way for them to successfully do that would have been to deconstruct themselves and build themselves again in the image of Dell. And that's really what a disruptive business model is, that you're between a rock and a hard place. What is making you successful today is really dragging you down. And this is not about Compaq management. And this is exactly the way we see our incumbent competition. They're all very well-managed companies. They've done excellent work in the market with clients, really well-known for their work. But they are between a rock and a hard place. And that's what we will really talk about in my presentation. So just to get some definitions out of the way, outsourcing and consulting, these are the two primary streams of our business. In my presentation, I'm going to largely refer to outsourcing as application outsourcing because it's just easier for me to deal with it. Infrastructure outsourcing, business process outsourcing, the same kind of fundamental principles apply to both. So if you look at the application space, application outsourcing, it targets run the business spend with the promise of improving cost performance parameters for the operations. Consulting-led application integration or application development. We also call this our business solutions stream, but basically we use them interchangeably. This targets the change the business spend on major programs where business expertise is required or the organizational change, degree of change is high. Now, between the two, there's obviously a lot of gray area, which is up for grabs. This is on small projects where the extent of change may be less or the business expertise required may, from outside the company may not be too high. Okay. So let's first tackle the outsourcing market. This slide here, it sort of depicts the structure of the outsourcing market on two dimensions, size of deal and size of market. Now, if you look at Gartner data, the size of the market is much higher at the large deal size. Right? This, even just from people who are familiar with the industry, it'll sound intuitive to us. Gartner actually said that 66% of the market is over $1 billion deal size, and only 4% of the market is below $100 million deal size. I have a problem with that in the way they define the outsourcing market. I think it's too narrow. But by and large, the structure of the market in outsourcing is like that. It's fat at the top. Now, where do we exist in this market? We compete in the small deal size, and a large piece of our outsourcing revenue comes from managed projects that over time really become outsourcing arrangements. Okay. A couple of clarifications here. First of all, small deal size does not mean small relationship with client. Okay, this is important to understand. Our outsourcing model really is a brick-by-brick outsourcing model. Right? The incumbent's outsourcing model, which is the box you see at the top, is what we call an all-at-once model. So they will rebadge employees, take the whole thing all at once. Our outsourcing model isn't like that. It's build on success, brick by brick. Okay? But essentially, you're solving the same business problem, which is you have an IT organization which does not perform as well as it should. They seek outside help. We provide that help through our brick by brick outsourcing model, and the incumbents provide that, I guess, through their all-at-once model. Okay? All right. So let's look at this market now. How is the structure of the market actually changing, and what is happening to incumbents and to us? We believe that the structure of the market is driving the on-site incumbent outsourcers to vacate the middle, and there are some good reasons why that's happening. First of all, on-site outsourcing has little cost leverage. I mean, if you just think about it, the all-at-once rebadge employees kind of outsourcing, what are you essentially doing? Right? If I'm a company and I have 1,000 employees in my IT organization, and I just rebadge those employees to another outsourced company, that outsourcing company has to add its own margin and give me some cost savings. Where is that going to come from? I mean, it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of cost leverage there. I mean, what are they actually doing? So the only place where you can get efficiency from is their promise that they can do the same work with fewer people. So sometimes I wonder if there's a business out there at all for this, but, you know, clearly there is. So the need to show cost savings actually drives margins down quite a bit. Okay, so there, and from public data, you can also make out their margins are far lower than ours on outsourcing. Point number two, outsourcing is a high involvement purchase for a CIO. Okay? And there's a lot of due diligence that is done. So this becomes a fairly high investment sale for an outsourcing company. So again, low margin, high investment in sale, you're automatically driven towards the large deals to make it work financially. The sales teams are high cost, specialized, and commission based. You know, the sales teams are, they will have somebody who's responsible for the client interface, for putting the solution together, for the HR piece, for the legal piece, for the finance piece. I mean, these are large teams. These are long pursuits, 6 months to 18 months. That's kind of duration of this, the pursuit. This is a high-cost business. On the other hand, transition to offshore outsourcing, if they were to compete with us on the offshore outsourcing piece, that is tough for them, both organizationally, and we went through some of those reasons in the morning about why it's difficult for them to compete on the offshore outsourcing space. And frankly, clients, credibility-wise, you know, clients don't really believe that they can pull it off. So we don't actually lose a lot of deals to them where we compete. We, on the other hand, we have good margins in the space we compete in, and we have the ability to make the smaller deals profitable. So what's happening now is that we have control over the small deal market. Okay? We also have a fairly large stream of revenue in outsourcing coming from the managed projects that are getting converted into outsourcing arrangements. We are now going up the deal size stack, and we are actually competing against them. And it's really hard for them to compete against us. They don't have the offshore model. They have a high-cost sales force and a high-cost sales model. That adjustment is proving to be just too much for them. So they're gradually vacating the middle ground to us. So that's what's happening. This is, again, you know, very similar to if you think back to Dell. Dell started with the desktop market, then they went into servers, networking gear. So it's one product line at a time. So that's what's happening. We're going up the stack and we're competing and winning. Now, the other interesting thing that's happening on the outsourcing side is that the structure of the market is changing. Okay? So the fat at the top inverted pyramid structure that you have today is actually changing because it's leveling out, and there are a few good reasons why that's happening. First of all at once deals are going out of favor. There are just too few success stories out there, and when you think through it logically, CIOs don't really see how it can work, you know. Rebadging a whole bunch of employees, how much savings are you going to get out of that? There are some other good reasons. IT is better understood today. Today you have business executives, CEOs, who understand IT much better. They don't feel the need anymore to say that, you know, I don't know what goes on there in that data center, and, you know, I think it's best if we hand it over to someone else so, you know, we can manage it through the invoices they give us rather than deal with this on our own. Today, business executives understand that IT is competitive advantage in most companies. CIOs also are much more business savvy, and they understand how to align the cost, the spend in IT with business value. So the need to actually go and say, you know, let's take the whole thing and give it out to somebody is going away. This doesn't mean the need for outsourcing is going away, but the need to do it all at once and the whole kit-kaboodle, that's going away. So there's some expectation that modularity will come into sourcing of IT, similar to manufacturing. So as things get better understood, the feeling is that people will say, let's look at this module of my IT spend and see how to optimize this, and does outsourcing fit this module better instead of, you know, treating all of IT as one homogenous thing. So the structure of the market is changing because of that, so it's kind of leveling out. We're already strong in the small deal size, and we're getting stronger in the middle. The top of it is anyway contracting. So things are going our way. It's really going to be hard for the on-site incumbents to compete. So our market strategy has been, one is that we are going to push a point of view called modular sourcing. Okay, so this I spoke to this earlier. We think that IT, as it becomes more better understood, is going to become more like manufacturing. So if you look at the way cars are put together today, you don't have a General Motors or a Ford building every single piece themselves. They essentially design it, and they ally with partners who can build the sub-assemblies for them, and the braking systems or the seating systems. And sometimes they'll do it themselves. You know, the powertrain, very often they will design and manufacture it themselves. That's the kind of thinking that is coming into IT now, which is you've got to look at IT in a modular fashion, right? So there's some pieces that will be optimized differently some pieces that should be sourced differently. So we're pushing module global sourcing as a point of view. And we've also created a unit called Strategic Global Sourcing, which overlays the IBU sales force. IBUs are our integrated business units, which is the way we go to market today. And they provide the large deal experience in SGS to the company. Because we know that as we start competing in the larger deal size, there will be issues like employee rebadges and things where we need expertise on the HR side and also more complex financial deals. Okay. So Steve and Paul covered the consulting market and what we're doing in Infosys Consulting. I'm just going to quickly go over this. The size of the market is fairly large, you know, $108 billion or so. It is also flat at the top, in the past driven largely by huge ERP implementations. But even now, large programs for operational transformation continue to exist out there. Companies perhaps manage it differently. They break it out so that they can get proof of concepts, ROI, in place before they move on to the next next module of that program. But certainly the need for large transformational change is still there. Our penetration is largely in the small project, small consulting opportunities so far. We fully intend to take our disruptive model into consulting as well. Okay, so again, from desktop to server, from outsourcing, from small outsourcing to large outsourcing, from small consulting to large transformational change consulting. We intend to take our disruptive model to all service lines. The reason why we will be disruptive to the incumbents on consulting, offshore is typically a cost center. It's a different organization, and you've already heard Nandan talk about the many reasons why organizationally it is so difficult for the incumbent consultants to actually compete with us because of organizational reasons. So I'm not going to go into that a whole lot. The partner sales model is a high-cost model. You have a smart partner, network partner concept right now that they have believed in for many years. But, you know, do they have too many of them? I don't know. It's something that they certainly spend a whole lot of money on that. Is that something that they will be able to... I'm sorry. Sustain, because that, you know, you need fairly high rates to sustain that kind of a cost of sales. So both on delivery and sales, you have reasons why the incumbent consultants will find it very difficult to compete. Our market strategy here is, number one, use application outsourcing to compete in the small consulting project market. Okay. This does not mean that we will deliver it differently or that we will use different resources or that we will, necessarily have a different quality value point here. All we're saying is by moving it under an existing MSA outsourcing arrangement, we significantly reduce the cost of sales, and the cost of sales is a big driver in professional services today. Number two, and the most important thing we're doing is building a world-class consulting organization in Infosys Consulting. So we are going to attack the high end of the market with Infosys Consulting, combine that with the strengths we have on the technology delivery side, and that's how we think we will compete and win. We've already gone through several questions on integration and so on. Our focus is on making the integrated model work by hiring people who buy in to the global delivery model as the future of this industry. And This is really the last slide there. Combining consulting with outsourcing. This is another major market strategy of ours, which is just to explain this. This is what BPO looks like today. This is what application outsourcing looks like, right? Outsourcing the operations of IT applications today. This is what consulting and application integration looks like. We think there's a significant market opportunity for combining consulting and outsourcing in what I call build and operate solutions. So you go to a company, you say, we know how to run a best practice, you know, go to a high-tech company and say, we know how to run a best practice order management function for you. And we've already done it in several places, and this is how it is done. This is the application platform on which it will rest. And we'll do the whole thing. We'll build it for you. We will support the application. We will also do the business process. So the value point that you can reach by this kind of build-operate solution is far, far better, and we think there's a significant opportunity there. Okay. So we have a few imperatives in sales, which is the plug for my function here. I have the sales function here. We know that we are competing against... We've done well in the past, right? We've competed in the offshore outsourcing market and done really well for ourselves. But now we're competing against companies, incumbents who have, you know, like someone said, awesome sales machines, right? I mean, they have invested and built it up over time. So they might have problems with that sales machine. Maybe it's too expensive today to maintain. But still, we're going up against them head-to-head in many deals. So we have to do a lot of things on our side to make this thing work. We reorganized in November in order to get our folks, our sales force into vertical business units where they could identify with their clients and their clients' industry more closely. We're spending a lot of quality time on talent management within sales organization. We just finished a round of role definitions. We created a tiered structure in sales, which allows senior roles to form peering relationships with CXOs. And you know, we're doing stuff like defining competencies for these roles. We're going to do in the future our recruitment, hiring, development, training, everything around this competency framework. We've significantly strengthened our performance management, aligned it to business results. So a lot of basic block and tackle stuff going on in sales today. We also are investing in a unified sales process across the company. As we grow in size, several different functions, there's a need for us to have a unified sales process across the company. So that's what we've been doing. I will take some questions if we have some time.
We'll take some quick questions. If you have some generic questions, we can wait for the Q&A panel at the end, just in the interest of getting back on time. Basav will be available for the last part also. So Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, Joe Vafi, Jeffries and Company. You're talking a little bit about deal size, and I think we're all familiar with the fact that larger IT deals that usually have a large infrastructure component to them, clearly that's not necessarily Infosys' focus. And how do you deal with that, and how is the customer looking at deals if deal size that's going to come towards you does get larger? Are they excluding infrastructure from these deals, or how are you working or thinking about the infrastructure side?
Okay. Yeah. Integrated outsourcing, which is what we call this, which includes infrastructure and application, is the trend for that is coming down. So actually this is again part of the whole modularization of IT. There was a time when you had to give them both out together, otherwise you couldn't separate the service levels. That's going away. As things get better understood, infrastructure can be outsourced separately and people are taking advantage of it. I think if you look at the data, application outsourcing as a standalone deal, the volume of that is significantly going up. So we're betting on that happening. We also are building out our infrastructure management service offering. We hope to... It's still nowhere near our maturity on application outsourcing, But we have had some success, again, at the smaller deal size. So we're hoping that, you know, as time goes by, we'll be able to take on the integrated outsourcing deals as well. One more?
Thanks. David Togut, Morgan Stanley. Perhaps Hema will address this in her presentation, but if you could perhaps talk about the recruiting aspect of putting together advisors and doers. In particular, it seems to me that the cultural challenge could be pretty significant, especially if you're trying to recruit someone who might go, let's say, to a McKinsey on the consulting side. So how do you get the buy-in on the cultural side, you know, for someone who might otherwise go to an elite standalone consulting firm, you know, perhaps more independence and so forth?
Steve, would you like to take that? Because much of the recruiting we're doing for, say, if we're competing against the McKinsey as a potential recruiting opportunity, that happened in Infosys Consulting, and I'll address the sales piece of it as well.
Right. Well, first of all, I think that roughly defined, right, there are two reasons people get into consulting. One is there are certain people get in that they want to rub elbows with the titans of industry and, you know, tell people at cocktail parties that they're management consultants. And I think that they will go to the traditional blue blood firms regardless, right? If they're in it for the branding, right, that's one. But there's a very large set of consultants who just love solving business problems, right? And really say that our job as management consultants is to create the most value we can for clients, is to find what are all the different ways that we can help this company run better, and to really, really enjoy that. And so those are the people that we're recruiting. And I think it is a much bigger dose of humility and work and focus on actually helping clients than on the other side. And I think one of the things that we're doing is to hiring, we have a very diverse set of backgrounds where we're hiring people, because I think one of the problems in the traditional firms is they're very homogenous, right? So there's the management consulting firms who hire people almost exclusively out of top name business schools, and everybody's from that mold, right? And there's the systems integrators who generally would hire people out of undergrads into the boot camp, and you get that perspective. And I think that the problem is that the identity of the people becomes around that as opposed to around solving problems for clients. And so we're trying to create a much more diverse workforce within the consulting arm, and saying because that respect for others and respect for the team is essential for working well with Infosys Consulting. So I think, so far that message has resonated. I think there are a lot of people who are just affected by, management consulting has sort of lost its way and has really fallen behind on where business has gone. I mean, if you think of, it's knowledge business, and it's sort of missed the whole global telecommunications thing, right? And management consulting largely also missed the entire merger of business and IT, right? So I think that we're trying to fix that, and I think that resonates, and recruiting the group, that's not our challenge.
Okay. Thanks. I'll also just answer that question for recruiting in sales. We're looking for people who not just have a consulting background, but also a good familiarity with outsourcing. And because that is today the bulk of our business, and not just outsourcing, they should be familiar enough with global services outsourcing, and that's what we're looking for. This is an exciting company to be in. Exciting for the good reasons, and there are some reasons which are sort of self-selecting. We work in 24/7, always on. You know, some people simply don't fit into that kind of a culture, and they don't apply. So that's one way we figure out the people who come to us, they believe in the global delivery model, they believe in our business model, and so it's kind of self-selecting in that way.
Let me just end the Q&A here. In the interest of time, we'll come back to your question in the Q&A session if you could just hold on. Thanks, Vasu.
Okay.